We're taking stock of work aspirations and what the job market is telling us in the Great Resignation. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Labor Department published new numbers this week. Roughly 47 million people voluntarily left their jobs for better work in 2021. Also notable from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, wages and salaries increased 4.5% over the course of the year. Are you considering a career change? What's driving your decision to jump ship? How has your work changed in this era? Do you feel adequately compensated? 800-642-1234. Meg Myers Morgan is an executive and career coach specializing in helping people make tough decisions and transitions at work. She's an assistant professor at the University of Oklahoma, wrote the book Everything is Negotiable. Meg, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, I'm so happy to be back.
Well, let's dip in at the Great Resignation, or the Great Reshuffle, as we see some platforms calling it. You watch these numbers, you see this breathtaking churn. What are some initial thoughts you want us to start us with as we consider what is going on out there and how do we apply it to our own lives?
Yeah, I think what's going on is a collective experience that we're all having with this pandemic that allowed us to have individual views of our career. And so we got to see how the workday could look different. We got to see how we could work differently. And I think that's led a lot of people to question, is where I'm at adequate enough anymore? Or do I now have more opportunities ahead of me to be flexible and maybe work from home or work remotely? And so the pandemic really just shook everything up for everybody. And they're now getting to look at their lives in a different way.
So perhaps we got a little bit of a taste of something else, and it caused pause for many workers to rethink what that next move is or what they are really doing.
Yeah, I always talk about employers having incentive to change, and forever, work from home was never the standard. And most companies were not even willing to offer it. And overnight, everyone seemed, or those that could, we're able to offer it all of a sudden. And many employees worked fine for 18 months up to 2 years. Some people are still working from home. And so the question becomes, why do we go back and how do we go back to the exact same way we did it before? That doesn't make any sense. And so you see sort of a power dynamic shift between what employers have demanded to now what employees are demanding.
Something stuck with me the last time we talked with you back in 2018, way pre-pandemic, but
yeah.
that there's a chance you may always be with the University of Oklahoma for the duration of your career. And it stuck with me because for people who are watching this great reshuffle and not leaving their employer, that too can feel uneasy because you feel like you're missing out on this golden opportunity, maybe a once-in-a-lifetime career growth opportunity. Can you speak to that tension of staying put?
Yeah, I think the reason that's only been further validated in the pandemic. I have two young kids. My husband and I were both working from home. I have been teaching virtually now for 2 years. And what I found was the university was able to accommodate the flexibility that I needed in the life that I was leading, and they were supportive of that. And so while I do feel that tension sometimes, oh, what else is out there? It was that I felt supported and I felt encouraged to live my life and work together. And so I would imagine if you're out there and you're wondering, is there something else out there? The question to ask yourself is, how am I being supported and encouraged where I am right now? And I am forever grateful that I had the job I did during the pandemic, because it was really hard to try to juggle absolutely everything. And I think you find a lot of employees feeling that right now and wanting more support from where they work.
Talking with Meg Myers Morgan, executive and career coach specializing in helping make those tough decisions and transitions at work, you can join in. What have you learned in these times about your career? Are you considering a change? What's driving that decision? What have you found as you go through the process? What questions do you have about switching? 800-642-1234. Meg, what is the best way to get a sense of your worth? I mean, you talk about finding that support at work. Part of that is your paycheck, right? And the market value for the job you're doing and the job you're going after. And especially in these really, you know, topsy-turvy times of high salary offers and signing bonuses and other perks, how do you really get grounded in your sense of worth in your job?
Well, I will say in the years I've been helping people negotiate salaries, salary is very rarely the main thing. It often represents something else. And I think we see that in the pandemic that yes, signing bonuses and yes, higher salaries are luring people away, but it's much bigger than that. It's much more about autonomy and flexibility and lifestyle at this point. So when it comes to deciding what you're worth at work, I always say to get about 3 data points. So what is a competitor of your company offering? What can you see online? And can you find somebody in your network that will be open and honest about what their company is making? And I have found that typically people are pretty open about what their salary is if you just ask them directly. We're just not used to being asked that directly. But then the second thing I would say is it may not always be money, and that's okay. I think we've kind of driven people to think that's the reason that we leave. And I think employers may feel that's the reason we leave. But the pandemic is showing that we're wanting so much more than that, or we're needing something different than that. And so I just suggest that people get incredibly clear on what it is that's going to make that balance between work and life doable, or that lifestyle that you want. Maybe that's money, maybe that's more time off, but you need to get incredibly clear about what that is.
So really taking that time to just understand what it is that you really want out of this next step. And maybe, as you said, it is the salary itself is only one factor driving that. I would also imagine you're going to tell us that we still need to do the research on those companies that we might be pursuing. What does that research entail?
Oh, it needs to come from someone's mouth. Like, you can only look at so much online. You need to be talking to somebody that left that company or is still at that company. And what is the culture? Culture is huge. And it sets the tone, because what we've found out is you can't come in and change the culture of a place. You can't come in and make it fit for you. You're more likely going to reflect what that company produces. And so you want to make sure that when you're going to an organization, that it's something that you're going to be proud to be part of, right? And so you don't want to just look at some online reviews and assume it's going to be okay. The other thing I'd say is oftentimes the problem that you're feeling in your job will follow you if you do not recognize what part you play in that. So for example, if you don't feel like you're paid very well and you take a job that's higher salary, what will happen when you need a raise? If you've not been able to ask for one before, if you have problems with management, if you don't get along with your coworkers, sometimes there's some personal exploration that goes into this process before you leave a company.
We heard from Nate in Viroqua, called in, couldn't stay with us. Nate is wondering about burnout, especially among teachers, nurses, frontline workers. How much of a factor, Nate asks, is burnout in career changes?
Oh, I think it's huge. And I think the thing that we see the most during the pandemic is, how is my mental health? That's the biggest question that I'm working with clients on, seeing people talk to me about, that it's often, what is my mental health? And we're still living through the pandemic. So we're trying to be resilient and make it through when we're still going through it. And that's really difficult. Then you have a subset of industries like Nate's, where you're on the front lines, or you're overly burned out because all eyes are on your industry, particularly those that are in healthcare or in the schools. And that just further leads to that burnout. So if you're thinking that your mental health is suffering from your job, that's like the number one sign that you need to consider a change.
Something's got to give. Mick Myers Morgan, career development expert at the University of Oklahoma, where she leads the graduate programs in public administration and nonprofit management on its Tulsa campus. How are you negotiating with your employer in these times? What has come up? What has come up that you don't know how to handle in your job situation? Have you worked with a recruiter through an online platform? How has that gone? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mick Myers Morgan here on the Ideas Network. We're getting career coaching advice on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our country saw record-breaking months of turnover last year. Call it churn. Employers responded with higher salaries. The new ADP report from the payroll processing firm, people who switched jobs increased their wages by an average of 8%. Did this happen to you, or are you seeking a new job because you know you're worth more or could get better benefits somewhere? Do you think the grass is greener at a different organization? 800-642-1234. Meg Myers-Morgan is a career development coach and with us for the hour. I want to look at these platforms, online platforms. LinkedIn, like, it trumpets the statistic that someone gets hired on their platform every 15 seconds. How should people approach these hiring platforms like Indeed, like ZipRecruiter and LinkedIn as a tool in their job search or in this process?
Get your profile where you want it. So it's one thing to go out and search, but I really want to see people showing who they are before they do that search, because the second that they apply for a job, they're going to be looked at. So what does your profile look like online? Most of the people I work with may not use LinkedIn, or they haven't updated their resume. Your resume should look like your LinkedIn profile. And then from there, use those filters when you're searching, because those filters tell me you know what it is that you're looking for, the particular title, the salary range, remote. I really want to see people narrow down their search so that they can find exactly what it is that they want. Because I think the inclination is to just spray the water hose everywhere and try to get everything and cast a wide net. And that's very rarely an effective strategy.
Angelo from Illinois called in, couldn't stay. Angelo worked in the food industry for a decade before going back to school and there earned their degree in computer science, loved their new job, reduced their stress a lot, Angelo said. A big help in the transition was working with a recruiter. What would you say about recruiters?
I would say that sounds right. And I'm so excited that was their experience. If you are trying to do your career transition by yourself, you're probably going to struggle. So a coach or a resume writer or recruiter, really try to think about who is a team that could help me. And even if it's not someone like a recruiter, do you have mentors or people in your network that you've called? You want an updated resume and an idea of what you want. And then you want to tell those people in your network, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Because as someone in my position, I get job ads sent to me constantly from people in my community. Hey, what students do you have or what clients do you have? And if I don't know if someone's looking, they're not going to be top of mind. So you just want to find out who your team is and make sure that you are top of mind to them.
Another thing is, as you looked at the online platforms, turning on the open to work feature on your profile and sharing your preferences on whether you want remote, on-site or hybrid, what would you say there?
I would only put the open to work if you are not employed currently.
Gotcha.
Other than that, I think you're okay to do some of those settings on the back end. But they, if your profile is really strong, they will find you. I don't think you need to have that toggle on. Because again, you don't necessarily want to burn a bridge where you're at.
Do you have practical tips on how to pivot your career when the people around you say, whoa, I didn't expect that? Or instead of that linear, predictable stair-step approach, climbing the rung at a company, you make a sideways step or a different move. What should we understand about pivots?
So pivots have to start with you. And I think a lot of people will say, I couldn't possibly leave this industry. I've been here for 10 years. I couldn't make that transition. And so when I work with clients, you know, 9 times out of 10, their hangup is themselves. And remember that any experience that you have is transferable, but a new industry or a new company may not fully understand that. So you have to make that clear to them in your cover letters, in your resume. You have to make it clear how your experiences where you are applicable to where you want to go. But again, so long as you are confident in that and know that that's okay to pivot, the rest will follow.
Do you see successful pivots? I mean, is it? Can you really actually shift entire industries and make that leap? And what are? Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of students that I've had in my graduate program that were school teachers, and this they have this mentality that no one will see me as anything other than a school teacher. And that's a really specific job that, you know, if you're a nurse, you know, people see you that way. Your identity kind of becomes that. And I could think of four right now that transitioned successfully into roles that were somewhat education-based, but were not at all in the school system. And once they made that transition, they realized how easy it was. And I actually had one go back to teaching, but they realized, okay, I'm never stuck. But it truly was their mentality, this kind of narrative we've built up of you could never be anything but this, or you've always been that. And I think people feel a little defensive. And so they kind of tiptoe up to something that they want. People are looking for great talent. And if you look at somebody who's a school teacher, I can't think of someone who's got more talent in terms of managing a classroom and project management skills and presentation skills. It's all about looking at what it is you do and how does that translate. And absolutely anyone can be successful at a pivot if they just know how to explain and to some degree market their skills.
I think it also couldn't even apply to you, or if I say the word professor, things come to mind. Like I put you in a box, and especially with your expertise in career coaching, that goes way out of that box.
Well, and I like that you bring that up because I write my own bios. I make sure that I articulate what it is that I do on LinkedIn. I don't really let opportunities for other people to define that for me. I work really hard to make sure I define that for myself, but you're absolutely right. That's been kind of an experience for me as an author and a keynote speaker and doing all of these other things. I have to kind of control that and not let other people.
Talking with Meg Myers-Morgan, executive and career coach, specializing in helping make these work transitions. You can join in with the experience you've had out there. How much does where you physically work matter to you during these times? Has an employer's approach to remote work changed your mind in some way? Are you employed but on the hunt for a different job? Maybe is there a pivot in the future? Join in with what you're tackling career-wise, 800-642-1234. So something that was new and different with some of the hiring processes of people around me, no one was calling references. It was all about a couple rounds of interviews with some people, key people, a test here or there, some work samples, and really trying to put together a package to woo that person to get that signature of yes, accepted offer. What is happening to reference checks in these times?
I think you're seeing, again, I'm laughing because I love that, the power dynamic shift of an employer. I mean, I've even seen employees now asking for references from the supervisor. Tell me someone that used to work for you that I can call, right? You see this, the enormity of the great resignation means that now the power has shifted and we're much more interested in scooping up talent where we can. And we realize that those reference checks, I mean, you're not going to put someone on your reference list who's not going to give you a glowing reference typically. And so we really want to see more of that skill base. So you see much more behavioral questions in the interview, and you also see these almost like assignments or even portfolios. So that has shifted much more about who can talk about you versus how can you talk about yourself and what is your skill set. But in that is absolutely a power dynamic shift, which thrills me, right? I want employees to have the power, and they should.
There's been some stories coming up when you say assignments in the interviewing process, where companies have given assignments for a prospective employee to test them, but these assignments are actual real work for the business. And I'm just wondering if you're seeing any of that out there, where a prospective employee is not getting paid for this work and they're actually doing some work to try to get the job.
Yeah, I think I do see that. I think that's incredibly predatory. What I would urge people to think about is when we're searching for jobs, we're so wanting to be accepted or get the offer, and we miss a lot of red flags. And I hope that in this transition, that people will be a little bit more cautious about that type of thing. If you're given an assignment that looks like, am I just doing, you know, your work for free? feel free to ask that question. Feel free to say, can you give me a little bit more information about how this is helpful? Because to me, I'm a little concerned. This feels like a lot of work this early in the process, or, you know, how will this be used, or will I maintain ownership over this? You actually have power in the interview process. And I don't want anyone to forget that, because that what you said can happen. But just be mindful of those red flags, because keep in mind, in the interview process, that's when organizations are rolling out the red carpet. That's when they're treating you the best. So if you're seeing red flags at that stage, just keep hold of that in your mind, because the way that the interview process goes is a great indication of how the job will be.
Meg Myers-Morgan giving us insights on changing careers, thinking strategically about the job market these days. Are you on the verge of quitting to find your true passion? Is your employer trying to hold on to you? What are they doing? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're learning how to make a career move and do it well on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 2021 Women in the Workplace report published by Kinsey & Company, it found women are even more burned out than they were in 2020. And burnout that Nate and Viroqua mentioned earlier, it's escalating much faster among women than men. One in three women said they have considered downshifting their careers or leaving the workforce. Are you at this point? What are you planning to change about your work life this year? Let's hear it. 800-642-1234. Meg Myers-Morgan is an assistant professor at the University of Oklahoma and a career development coach with us for the hour. Let's talk about women changing jobs, Meg. You know that women have been disproportionately affected in these times. They don't earn as much as men do. They don't get promoted as often to management roles. What should women specifically be thinking about in these decisions?
Oh, well, what we saw was just an amplification of what we already knew was there. When the crisis hit, it was very obvious that women were going to be impacted more. And a huge part of that is childcare. And what you're seeing now across the nation are cities and policy that's trying to sort of address the childcare issue. I think one thing that women can keep in mind is we don't have to be the default parent. I know that's probably a privileged point of view to say, but I think a lot of people want to back out of their careers because of that. They want to leave and take care of the kids. And I think one thing to keep in mind is have that conversation with your supervisor. We have shifted the way that work is done. We have shifted the hours when work is done. So before you count yourself out, before you back out, before you, I would say sacrifice, make sure that you're talking to your partner, make sure you're talking to your supervisor, because I do think there is extreme wiggle room there to accommodate what you need accommodating.
Extreme wiggle room, but those meetings over Zoom with the kid in the background, those meetings are still going to happen at the same time, perhaps. I mean, it's hard to move some things or change some things that are very much structured into a particular workday or into a particular way a group or department works. And adjusting to one person may or may not happen. So how do you approach that?
Well, I think though that the shift in the pandemic of we see that our lives are happening in that Zoom square. We see, you know, cats coming across the keyboard and kids in the background. I do think there is a shift in how we're seeing our life and work blend together. So there's more opportunity now to have that conversation where, you know, even my own experience, my husband's employer suddenly had to realize, oh, men and women are taking care of their children at home because I can see them. And so I think there is a little bit of a cooling or a melting on that, that idea that we have to be compartmentalized, that we can only exist at work and not have our home life interfere and vice versa. So that may not be true for everybody, but I do sense that companies in general, especially knowing that we're losing so much talent, have to be more accommodating to our lives outside of work.
Do you see at all the pay ever going to be budging here, you know, as far as the pay between men and women in the workforce?
Oh, that's a layered one. I will say the best thing that women can do is to negotiate their salaries, to make sure that they're doing market research, that they're being paid well, and then also opt into companies or opt into applying to jobs where there's pay transparency in the job ad, because that's an indication that the company is transparent about that. And there's not, if you've posted the pay scale, there's less likely to be discrepancy between men and women. That is a big battle, but I think what we are seeing with the Great Resignation and sort of having to compete, that we may also see that that gap decrease a little bit between men and women.
Another question coming in here. Nancy in Grafton called in, and Nancy's daughter graduated college with a degree in interior design. And Nancy's daughter took a job at a hospital as a hospital interior designer, worked for more than 41 years before retiring. And Nancy is wondering, how common is it for people to stick with the same company for their entire career?
That not common. That's and I had no idea. I wouldn't even think about a hospital needing an interior designer, but of course they do. It sounds to me, when I hear somebody that stayed at a job for 41 years, my first thought is they felt encouraged and happy and supported in that role. But it is very generational, and we're seeing Gen X and Gen Z are just not going to stay in jobs. And then that also means that jobs aren't really built for you to stay in them. And I think it's completely reasonable to stay at a place if you aren't feeling stuck and your mental health is good and you feel paid well. But it's just reminding yourself that you can ask for more, and you can absolutely transition if you need more opportunity.
You saying that reminds me that some companies are being very transparent at the beginning of hiring someone, that there is a pathway for growth for that person. Mm-hmm. They see a trajectory as to where mm-hmm. they will be going with a certain organization. What are you seeing there? How common is that?
That's not incredibly common on that I've heard from the interview process, but it should be brought up from you, the candidate.
Okay.
What is the pathway here? If a company is telling you that in the interview process, take that job. that sounds great, because what we find is people leave for two reasons, their manager or their board. And so people want to have.
And board master- meaning not board of directors.
right.
Because you work with many boards of directors.
That's true. Okay, maybe there's three reasons. But yes, people, at least the clients and the students that I work with, if employers knew that boredom was part of it, the monotony of work can really be soul crushing, right? We want to have new opportunities. We want to be able to be masters and experts at things. And if employers could shift their mentality of pouring into these talented people and creating pathways for them and letting them hit milestones and being really clear on what their expectations are, these are the things that people are craving. And so, yeah, it's true to say sometimes we leave because we want more money, but more often than not, it's we have a bad manager who is absolutely stunting our ability to grow in this company.
Meg Myers-Morgan with us, executive and career coach, helping us on the current workforce that we see out there and what happens next, author of Everything is Negotiable. You can join in with your questions. Where are you at with your job? Have you quit and recently gone back to school? What are you studying, and what job do you hope to land from it? 800-642-1234. So education is a really interesting point here, and I want to get into this audit of yourself. How should we conduct a professional audit of our capabilities and skills in order to really be ready to hit the job market?
Yeah, so when you think about where you want to be, almost always someone will say, well, you need more training or you need education. And as a person who's in higher education, sometimes I don't buy that. Sometimes I don't buy you need more education, but I do think you need to collaborate with your supervisor to get you where you want to go. And if your supervisor is unwilling to collaborate with you, that's probably a good sign it's time to move on. But it might be as easy as going to your supervisor and saying, what professional development funds are available for me? Like, what's the budget per employee for me to get some training? Because what I really want people to do is have their companies pay for that training, pay for that education. And when you do an audit of what it is, what skill that you need that you don't have, that's the time to say, okay, who can help me get there, right? When it comes to going back to school or doing education, a lot of people, again, go at it alone. They make these decisions alone. They go to school alone. They pay for it alone. I really want to see people think of their professional journey as a collaboration with their mentors, their supervisors. Professors are really good to talk to at universities about what can you actually guarantee me from this training?
That's interesting too, because the employer, it might not just be going to conferences, but there could be funds there to get some certificates or do some additional training or certifications that could really add value to your career and to your job.
Absolutely. And what you don't want to have happen is to walk in and say, what do you think I should get training on, right? You want to come in. I mean, unless it's just a great boss that's like, I think you could really benefit from X, Y, or Z. But you want to go in and say, hey, I'm really interested in hiring a coach, or I'm really interested in going back to school, or whatever. And then why? Why should I invest in that? Well, if you invest in that, I believe that I can be more efficient in my job, or I think I could develop into a stronger leader, right? Give them what is the mutual benefit. But almost every company has those funds available. They just aren't really ever tapped. And if there aren't any available right now, you know, you could ask for that to be part of the budgeting process. That could also be part of your salary renegotiation. I want some professional development funds, and I want you to invest in my training.
And really knowing what percentage perhaps of that job description is devoted to those professional development type opportunities, because that's going to take you away from all the other responsibilities you have in your job.
Exactly. And because you mentioned job description, I just want to also add in, make sure you're looking at what your job description said. And if it's changing, you need to keep note of what your new responsibilities are, and just make sure you're having that conversation with your supervisor. Hey, I'm not doing the same job you hired me in at, and I'm getting paid for that job. I'm doing a different job.
Meg Myers Morgan, executive coach, career development expert. You can join in. Have you quit your job recently to go back to school to get more credentials? What are you studying? What do you hope to land? What will it lead to? How much do you, you know, think about where you physically work and what matters to you in these pandemic times? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're taking stock of career development in the Great Resignation, getting advice on how to navigate these times. 70% of employers are willing to train the right candidate. That's from Monster's Future of Work report just out. It's an annual global survey showing strong hiring outlook for this year. Does your employer offer training? Have you had to refresh and update your skills on your own? What did that entail? 800-642-1234. Meg Myers Morgan is a career development expert and with us for about 8 more minutes. Let's go to Kathleen now in the Twin Cities. Hi, Kathleen. What is coming up for you?
Good morning. I have had a number of employers determine that this isn't a job I'm really interested in, but it is too entry level or something like that. And I know that's their decision because I know other people in the organization who have told me about the conversation. And I've also been in a position to be on the hiring side in the past, and other people on the hiring team have made guesses really about whether or not the applicant is seriously interested in the position. So it's very frustrating when the employer doesn't take you seriously. I found it interesting when Meg said employers are looking for good talent. That hasn't been my experience. I think employers are really short-sighted about what applicants are interested in.
Oh, Kathleen, so you bring up, yes. Yes, thank you so much. Meg.
Yeah, I that does not surprise me. And I do see that, to where I wish people knew from the hiring side that they're going to write an entire story about you. And you could live 30 minutes away and they'll say, oh, I don't think they're going to be interested in driving that far. I mean, they will make up any story. And so in this particular instance, I don't know if you're submitting cover letters, but if you could be very specific in the cover letter, look, I am interested in this role and here's why. And while I may not look like the candidate you're thinking of, and then of course, take control of that story and let them know kind of on the front end that you understand that you may look different, but that you are the absolute right candidate for the role. The second thing I would say is a lot of times when we're building our resume, we think we have to put absolutely everything on there. You don't, you're just trying to get the interview. So I'm not ever encouraging anyone to lie on their resume, but I am encouraging people to tailor that. So if you're putting, you know, 30 years of experience on there, it might be better to say something like career highlights or relevant experience, and then just build your resume to really be tailored to what they're asking. Because again, we don't want them to have to second guess. We don't want them to have to read through your resume and say, oh, I see that she's very overqualified, but maybe she'd be willing. We want to answer all those questions for them.
Yeah, that issue of being overqualified, or as Kathleen, you know, has encountered, you're just, you know, this is too entry level for what you bring from your background. That can be some baggage there, and that can be really tricky to navigate, because maybe you do really want to downshift and you're not looking for something that is harder than what you're doing now, mm-hmm. per se. How do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would just also wonder, depending on how far along she is in her career, what about the entry-level position is exciting? Is if it really is the sort of less stress, or I completely understand that, but I'd also just question, because if we're not getting interviews from our resume, it's often an indication that our job search, the jobs that we're applying for, are not tailored enough to our skills. And then the reverse, we're not tailoring our resumes enough to the job. So, I mean, I think there's a question in there of why the entry-level positions, which again, there may be a completely perfect explanation, but if I'm asking that question, the employer's asking that question, go ahead and answer that for them.
Kathleen, what are your thoughts there? You're still with us.
I am. In this instance, the specific instance that I'm referring to, I wouldn't consider an entry-level position. I actually consider it a perfect match. And I've applied for the position each time it's been open, which has been 4 times in the last 2 years. So I think perhaps the employer thinks it's entry level, and it's not, and that's why people keep leaving. But I'm not sure how I can tell, how can I bring that to their attention without really sounding like a know-it-all.
Kathleen, thank you. Yes, Meg.
If she could get a hold of somebody, like talk to a person, if there's somebody in the organization that you can reach out to. But the second thing that I would say is, if you are 100% match for it, you are overqualified, right? And so it does, you do kind of want to be applying for jobs that you're about 60, 70% of a match on a job ad. But if it's absolutely the job that you think that you want, Kathleen, I would just try to find somebody within the organization that you can reach out to and tell your story to.
Here's something also coming up. And Kathleen, thank you so much for calling in. We had talked with a Harvard Business School workforce type director recently, who said, you know, looking at these job descriptions out there, they put everything but the kitchen sink in there. Yeah. There's so much packed into these job descriptions. And her recommendation was, employers, get out your red editing pen and take, you know, be realistic here. What do you see in job descriptions, Meg?
Yeah, I think you see, you do see that editing down, because if a job description is super, super long, that's already a red flag to me. You want job descriptions to really be about what is the job, not what are the requirements, because people get really hung up on those requirements. Mm-hmm. And they are often built by committee. They are often sort of off the wall, people just saying, wouldn't it be great if they had, you know, pottery experience or whatever they want to put on there. And no, you know, nobody, some woman's out there going, well, I've never done pottery. And so they're just not like applying. So you really want to just look at that job description and say, can I do this job? And is it a little bit of a challenge for me to do this job? And that's the sweet spot. Like, am I a little bit nervous to do this job? But yeah, the employers really need to streamline those, and to really back off on the requirements part and just have people focus on what does this job look like day to day?
Okay, Meg, I want to land on ageism, diversity, and inclusion. Many companies have been working on D&I goals. I just want to get your feelings there, where we're at, and how to deal with these really ingrained, you know, chronic issues in the workforce.
Oh, yeah. So that's not going away. And I would say if a company is really upfront on their website, they really care about it. I want you to then go look up the people at the top and see if that's true. There's always going to be things that a company says. I want you to call people on the inside and ask if that's true. And just be aware that companies are certainly trying. If the question is, what do you do if you're experiencing that? Again, I want you to think about who you can talk to get better insight, and what team around you, mentors, advisors, can kind of help you navigate that really difficult spot. But hopefully the trend that we're seeing with employees having this dynamic power dynamic shift, that quest for better DE&I will actually accelerate. And that's my hope.
You know, and certainly I would imagine in the interview process, as you look, perhaps it's a panel of people who are interviewing you and you bring up diversity and inclusion. What are some things you want to be hearing? What are some red flag potentials?
Well, who's in the room? That would be very telling. Mm. What is the breakdown of the people in the room? You know, diversity and inclusion starts with the actual thought behind the role. So if you're having that conversation after we've hired the person, you've missed about four steps. Recruiting for the role needs to include diversity, inclusion, writing of the job description, how we even think about the role. All of that has to include DE&I. So if you've gotten all the way to the interview process and you're sitting in the room with four white guys, there may have been some steps that have been missed. To the extent that you want to call that out, you know, I leave that up to you, but you really want to kind of look at companies that are practicing what they say they preach.
We only have a few seconds left. Will there be a cooling off in the future here in 2022? When you look into your crystal ball, what do you see for workers changing jobs?
I think it will continue to accelerate. I think probably 4 or 5 years, we'll see maybe a swing back to more hybrid work. But everyone ride this wave, because we have waited a long time to have this sort of leverage. So please take advantage of it.
Oh, Meg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Meg Myers-Morgan, executive and career coach specializing in helping make those decisions and transitions at work, wrote the book Everything is Negotiable, based at the University of Oklahoma. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.